Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me, Vern Harnish, today, who I think doesn't really need to so much introduction. He's an author of Rockefeller Habits, Scaling Up, and The Greatest Business Decision at All Time. And he's a columnist in Fortune magazine as a growth guy. So you are running an MSP, and if you haven't read the first book he wrote, like, you should just stop this thing and order it on Amazon and start building up your business. So thanks, Vern, for joining us today. How are you today?
Very well, Danish. I'm here in sunny Barcelona, though you've caught me here late. I haven't had a chance to shave all day, and so
I know this. This is the crazy time you can run your business from wherever you want. And actually, that's the our audience is with checking this video is about many services. So you know a little bit of the industry, and you know how difficult time they get today. And for like two things I would like to cover with you today. First is like you see lots of people, lots of companies around the world having in difficult time disruption among the industries, and you know they have to somehow reinvent themselves. And like, give us your two cents about that. What those managed services you think you should do? The second thing is probably is going to come after this conversation is like how to be a real business consultant. How you see your partners, your clients getting into this consulting business and getting higher up to the food chain. So we are really, really excited on your thoughts. What's your first idea about that?
Well, you know, what we talk about in the book Scaling Up, that, you know, Dennis, the fundamental weakness is marketing. In fact, you know, back at MIT, where I launched that program called Birthing of Giants, our senior faculty member, Ed Roberts, did the original research that showed that tech startups, those that scaled further faster, one of the members was not a techie, but was focused on marketing. And so I think it's critical, and Steve Jobs got a lot of coaching from Regis McKenna, the big marketing guru, who helped him, and Andy Grove, rest his soul, who passed away here recently. And the key was to set up a one-hour marketing meeting every week, and then start working your list and the four P's or four E's of marketing. And of those four P's, product, price, place, and promotion, I got to tell you, the one area that none of us are focusing enough on is pricing. And, you know, it's amateur hour for most companies when it comes to setting the price. And so a buddy of mine, Herman Simon, just wrote a book, Confessions of a Pricing Man, and I absolutely recommend everybody read that book and get more sophisticated on pricing, which is a way you're going to be able to do better in the marketplace. The second, and it goes with marketing, is, Dennis, you absolutely have to not specialize, but hyper-specialize. Let me give you an example that's related but outside the industry. So a good buddy of mine, Arnie Malum, he's in marketing. Digital marketing.
Okay.
And by the way, there is as many marketing firms as there are IT firms. In fact, there's a new one popping up every weekend as some college student can't find a job. And they, you know, they do one of two things. I'm going to go into IT services or I'm going to go into digital marketing. And Arnie says, all right, I'm going to do the same, but I'm only going to focus on lawyers, but not any lawyers. I'm going to focus on personal injury lawyers, but not just any personal injury lawyer. I'm only going to commit to work with one personal injury law firm per city, but not just any city, only a city, what we call an NFL city, that's big enough to have a National Football League team. And his goal then is to help that company become number one in their marketplace. And it's been brilliant, because once he can laser focus on just the one client there in that city, and he takes them to number one, and he charges them a nice price to do that, then he's got him in a bind, because once he's made him number one, they might decide, well, I don't need Arnie, expensive Arnie, anymore. But if they fire him, now they've just given him permission to go to the number two competitor and make them number one. And you know what we call this? We call this blackmail. And there is lots of money to be made in blackmail. So I think what you've got to do if you're an IT services firm is you have to hyper-specialize, and you've got to become the number one IT service firms for not just law firms, but divorce law firms, and I'm only going to work with the top one in each of the major NFL cities, and get yourself out of Memphis. And thinking that your business is just local, where you're fighting and competing with everybody else. And so that's my really, really strong message, because there's just enough nuanced difference in a law firm versus other companies, and a personal injury law firm versus other law firms, not only from a marketing perspective, but from an IT services perspective. Which, by the way, is going to lead us to question number two.
Yeah, actually, I would like to stick in this thing, because, like, most of the time I hear problems from many services are differentiation. Yeah. Differentiation when you have a commodity business, why you are different. And I think what you say they are not going to like it, because it's a lot of work, actually create a hyper-specialized work for that thing. But what you see is like what these people are doing, actually they don't really know their clients, they know the infrastructure, Office 365, these things, and they don't really care what is the business they are running on. They have to understand first their clients, right?
You got it. And which leads to your second question, which is, you know, you've got to get into the executive suite.
Yeah.
And you know that Arnie is there helping set strategy with this personal injury law firm. And because he's seen the best in other cities, but he's not helping any of their competitors, he is really a huge source of strategic advantage to the client. Yeah. And that's what you want, is you want to ultimately be the king of, the queen of, the godfather of, you know, IT services for that industry. Now, a buddy of mine, one of my early students, Sam Goodner, Sam built his IT services firm out of Austin with a slightly different specialization. His was, we're only going to do Microsoft, and we're going to be the absolute best at implementing a full suite of Microsoft solutions. And we're not going to go with anyone else's technologies. We are not going to be agnostic. We're going to have a viewpoint. And he built it in one of the largest in the US, and then sold it to ChinaSoft, which is now the largest Microsoft solution provider in the world. And again, it was a very important point of differentiation. It made Sam both wealthy and his company highly successful.
And that's like when we are talking about differentiation and hyper, you know, focus or positioning, most of the specialization, most of the argument you are going to get, like, I don't have that big market. I'm not going to get that many clients. It's going to be, I'm going to get rid of lots of good prospects. Like, this is a typical you know, objection might be there. What's your answer for that?
Well, and that is what gets you in trouble. You know, the biggest problem is letting your salespeople, and for many of it, you, go after any low-hanging fruit you can find. Anybody. And that's the quickest way for you to get your margins crushed and to get commoditized right out of the marketplace. And you've got to be very specific about the customers you're going after. We've got the same thing. There's over 500,000 customers, potential customers in our market just in the United States. And we're working on all six continents. There's no way I can go after that 500,000. But we have figured out a very simple question that somewhere in our conversation, when somebody says, hey, we hear you're good at what you do, what could you do to help us to scale up? If you don't give us the right answer to this one question, we move on. And it's our way of saying these are the 15,000 of the 500,000 companies that we want to target. And look, strategy is all about one very simple thing, Danish, and that's knowing what to say no to. People without and by the way, let's be really clear. Your first 3 to 5 years in business, you got to say yes to everything. So I really want to differentiate here whether you're like kind of less than 3 years in business, or you're more than 5 years. Less than 3 years, you just lie through your teeth. You take any business that comes your way and you figure it out, just to try to get up the learning curve. But look, somewhere in the third, fourth, or fifth year, you need to sit down and say, all right, what are our best customers? What do they have in common? What is it we like to do? What are we really good at? And you need to start specializing and ultimately hyper-specializing. And if you don't cross that chasm, as Jeffrey Moore says, the customers that helped you get started initially almost or always your absolutely worst customers to scale up on. And if you don't cross that chasm, you're going to live with tight margins, which I don't think is any fun.
Yeah, and the only thing like hyper-specialization is like an important part, because like if you are going to go into the hearts and minds of your customers, right, you have to know everything about them. All the application they might use, all the applications their customers use, their competition are using, everything, you have to breathe their air. You have to know all the lingos they have. And you cannot really scale up a business which need hyper good MBA guys all around knowing everything. You need, for that vertical, like medical, you need one guy trained on medical and go on that. That go to the accounting firm, that go to the like lawyer firm. So that's.
And by the way, when you do this, your marketing costs plummet.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to try to reach everyone. The handful of customers you know you want are probably hanging out at one show, at one meeting place, one restaurant.
You can
in
go
town, one association meeting. So my marketing costs and my marketing time plummets. And word of mouth can now work to your advantage.
And if you go to LinkedIn, you can check all the people in your town is in this industry. You get the 50 best, and you are going to work with the 50 best.
And by the way, let me give you another example of hyper-specialization. So I've got a dear friend who's, again, who's a lawyer, who his total market are the EO, the Entrepreneur Organization, I founded, the EO members in the Washington, D.C. chapter. And that chapter's got about 200 members. He is the sponsor. He's been the sponsor for decades. He attends more meetings than the members do, so that he really is a default member. And every one of us who's got a legal problem just says, go see so-and-so, and everybody knows who he is. And the guy's built up an amazing multi-million-dollar practice by focusing on that specific group of customers that are all hanging together in one place. But that's the point. I don't care if the hyper-specialization is an industry type or a group of customers. Maybe you decide I'm going to help everybody that are Rotary members.
Okay.
You know, and you become the guy that the Rotary members all use. I don't care what it is. You got to hyper-specialize.
Yeah, it can be the problem, the solution, any type of thing. It's not just the vertical or the industry, can be the specialization fact. Cool.
That's right.
I think it's a big help. The second thing, like imagine the guy was working more in the engineering side, less customer-facing application, customer-facing account management. We call that virtual CIO, the CIO who is as a service. So. Yeah. Like you work with many brightest people. You come to your company to want to be a member or the partner. You know, how you see who is fit to this type of consultative, go to the executive suits, actually understand their business. So what the skills, what the how you feel like they are going to be a good consultant?
You know what? The first thing you have to do is relearn how to read. I'm serious. Nobody reads anymore, Danish, you know? But it wasn't by accident. You know, Alan Murray, my editor at Fortune, recently interviewed Larry Page. It's, CEO of Google. And he asked Larry, all right, how did you learn to be a leader? And all that encompasses, the CEO of a major company. When, look, you're talking about a guy who is a geek. And he turns to Alan and he said very simply, I read a lot. So, like when they went to things like Alphabet recently, which is an unbelievably brilliant name. Let's start there. Most of the IT service firms I know have the stupidest names on the planet. You know, you're never going to scale up if you don't have a decent name. And so Larry says, well, when we went to go name, we just read 3 books on naming. Who out there in your audience has read even a book on how to price? Yet they're out there setting price every single day. You know, Mark Zuckerberg last year, another geek, you know, committed to read a book every 2 weeks. Mark Cuban, who I've known for 30 years. Mark had a, guess what, IT services company. That's how he got his start in Dallas, Texas. And if you read his biography, which is brilliant, you know, he talks about, first of all, what put him ahead of everybody else is he read the friggin' manuals. And he went on to realize, and something he does still today, the guy reads 3 hours every day. And when he got married, you know, us guys got to give up a lot of stuff, including our furniture. But he says to his wife, the one thing I'm not going to give up is my habit of reading 3 hours every day. And all he does is look for one idea in that 3 hours to help one of the 155 plus companies that he's invested in as part of being a shark on Shark Tank and running the Dallas Mavericks. And so, look, leaders are readers. And, like, I don't care if you read or you listen to Audible in your car or you watch YouTube videos, but you got to read the friggin' manual about business, not just the manual about technology if you want to move into a consulting role. And by the way, if you want to read, look, now I'm going to have an unabashed commercial. You know, if you want to read the equivalent of a dozen books twice a year, you know, come to our scale-up summit. And for 2 days, Sam Goodner and his team were there like clockwork, sitting at the feet of the smartest business thinkers of our time for 2 days, twice a year. And that's why his team was so brilliant when it came to not just technology, but to building a company. And he could talk strategy with companies. So leaders are leaders.
And I think what you did really well on both books, I was fortunate to read the Scaling Up and the Rockefeller Habits, is like, I just read like how many citation for many great books. So if you just start with that, you are going to have like abundance of different good books you can read on the topic, right? And you made everything like really clear and crisp and easy to digest. But lots of time you see this one page strategy, something like that. You need more to read on the different topics and, you know, evolving with you. And that's why I love this thing. The second is the pricing. So can you imagine that today the most widespread pricing on managed services is one price? I don't care who you are, how big is your company, what you do, my price is $100 per user. Can you?
I know it. It's nuts. No. Look, you know, the key is demand pricing. You know, let's start with Amazon.
Okay.
My book is not the same price in any 1 hour, let alone any one day. Yet everyone else in retail is forced to put a sticker on that book and live with that price until they're forced to mark it down a year later at a fire sale. And it's just ludicrous. Yeah. And so get Herman Simon's book, Pricing, The Confessions of a Pricing Man. And I want you to read the case study about the London Olympics. I mean, people don't realize the London Olympics generated more revenue than the previous 3 Olympics combined. And it was a lot to do with very clever pricing. So it's not about low price or high price or different prices. They did something clever like pay your age. So if you were 4 years old, you only paid £4 to go to an event. If you were 11, you paid £11. If you're an adult, you paid the full fare. People thought this was unbelievably fair. And as a result, all their venues were full. Yet they didn't do any discounting, which is what a lot of the Olympics do. So there's lots of strategies that you know, we'll spend hours over, you know, penny per page with our local, you know, our latest 5-year Xerox printing contract. But when it comes to pricing, we're just like licking our fingers and putting it to the wind. So you've got to up your game of pricing.
And in this pricing, like what you are saying is like it's a customer-driven pricing rather than I have a cost, I make my math, and that's 120 because I can make 30% margin, and that's my price. But for yeah, you, what well, you are suggesting?
It's demand-driven.
Demand.
Yes, it's by. Like, you know who figured this out with airlines? You know, the airlines have lost money for a gazillion years. For the same reason a lot of the IT service industries lost money for a gazillion years. They finally, 36 months ago, woke up and figured out that we ought to have a different kind of pricing. You know, it used to be one price, you know, maybe economy and business class from point A to point B. Today, everyone on that airplane is paid a different price. Yeah. Depending on if they wanted 1, 2, or 3 bags, they wanted a seat with more leg room, they wanted a seat, you know, they want to buy some coffee or not, they wanted food. There's a lot more what's called exchange pricing, where the customer has got a lot more menu choice about what it is that they want and what they don't want, and that allowed the industry in the United States to net $22 billion last year, 2015.
Wow, that's big.
After losing money for decades.
You know, we covered the differentiation, we covered pricing, we covered strategies. And most of the people, and reading a lot, and most of the people are going to get there. What is the execution?
Anyway,
what is
on the reading lot, let me just suggest, there's 13,000 books, business books a year. So you're right. In scaling up, I recommend 40. Take that list of 40 books and split it among your 10 employees and each read 4 and report back. All they have to do is read one book a quarter and report back the 2 ideas they think would be helpful. And you just got 40 books covered in 12 months.
That's more.
And then I put out a list in Fortune of the 5 best business books every single year. So you just have to go to fortune.com, search my name, Harnish, and you'll see, you know, as you scroll through my articles by date, the articles I wrote about the 5 best business books. You do that, you're going to be ahead of 99% of your competition.
Yeah. And last but not least, based on execution, you are really great on execution, and everything what you do is basically good because it's executable. And what's your, like, 3 tips of actually not just reading and getting on your head and try to do it by yourself, actually take action and do something, which is going to get a feedback loop and you get momentum and something. Like most people I see, they're stuck on their minds. And, you know, I know that's why you created EO to get leadership and things like that. But, you know, actually
let me cut to it. So look, anyone who creates software in the 21st century knows that there's only one best practice. It's called Scrum or Agile. It goes by a few different names. And at the heart of that is something, a very simple process that's the same as Rockefeller Habits. You pick 2-week sprints, and then you talk about it, you meet about it every single day. And the thing that we made popular 14 years ago was this daily huddle. If you want to move faster, you've got to pulse faster. By the way, Steve Jobs had lunch every day with Jonathan Ive, and that's why they had such well-designed products. You know, he didn't meet with him once a week. He met with him every single day. And so people know you want to build robust software, you meet every day in a Scrum process. If you want to build a robust company, you've got to do the same. So that daily huddle is critical. Now, what are you going to discuss that daily huddle? What are the 1 or 2 things we got to do today to reach that sprint in the next few weeks in order to accomplish what it is we need to do this quarter and this year? It's just constantly taking the elephant and taking it down and eating it one bite at a time. And then it's figuring out, look, it all comes down to routines. You know, your success comes back to what it is that you do more of, less of, or different every single day. And so every few months I pick 4 or 5 new habits or routines, whether it's, you know, doing my meditation every day or spending time playing with my youngest son the way he wants to play, or reaching out to one influencer every day, or right now, it's how do I build up this scale-up institute one day at a time, and I then have what's called a peer coach. The absolute best idea I've ever had shared, Marshall Goldsmith, was to get a peer coach, get a friend. Sebastian Ross is that person for me. And we each pick four or five things we got to do more of, less of, or different every day. And then we have to report to each other every day whether we did it. And this is how you hold yourself accountable. You hold your feet to the fire. So if you pick something that matters and you do something about it every single day, compound interest is your friend.
Yeah.
And I hate to be so bloody simple about it, but that's what it's about.
Vern, I know it's 10 o'clock on your time. And
it is.
And I would be happy to crush it more, but I appreciate the time you spent with us. And I think that's a lot to digest.
All right.
And again, thanks very much for you. And if you have any, closing thoughts, like give us anything for this industry, like where do you see these the successful companies are going to move? You have this cloud and everything.
Look, I think it's the same move Michael Dell's making. You know, I've known Michael for all these decades. You know, he's moving from products to services. That's why he took the company back private. You know, so it's all of, every product company on the planet adds services, and every service company figures out how to productize. So what you want to do is you got to take your, like Steelcase dealers, bless their heart, the margins in office furniture is zero. But it's the services that they wrap around it so that my buddy, Jim, who runs the Steelcase dealership out of Denver, has got, 12% net when everyone else is hoping to break even in the industry. So that's critical. And then I really recommend folks that they would go to scalingup.com. I got a bunch of free tools and sign up for my weekly insight that I'm trying to deliver a few basic ideas like this every single week. I'll be in your face every Thursday, and Sam and our other thousands of customers, we got about 75,000 leaders that read this every Thursday. I hope your listeners will join the pack.
Vern, I can't tell you how grateful I am to have this interview, and I let you leave now. Thank you very much for your wisdom, and thanks for listening, guys. And Vern, that was awesome. Thanks.
Dave, thank you so much for the opportunity to share, and hopefully it helps some people out there.
Yeah, I'm sure. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Adios. Bye.
Thank you, Vern.